The Army's in the house.
Not just the Army.
No.
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 No, no, no.
No, 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 no. That's right. Lieutenant General is with us, Joseph Anderson.
Yes.
And he is, it says right here, certified badass. I think the Army wrote that, General. I hope that that's...
It's a very true statement.
I will bet. He's got that look in his eyes.
Yeah, you better believe it.
You just do not. This is not the kind of guy you want to say no to, or can, I don't think, say no to.
No, you cannot.
No. And you got your airborne with you here as well.
I have supporting troops in case you guys get out of control.
Yes, I understand. How are things going in the Army?
Very well. The Army got to grow a little bit. The Army's getting to modernize. The Army's training to different standards to get ready for different adversaries, and it's well-resourced to do it. So we're a pretty good place.
Let's talk about that, because there's a lot of conversation now about budgeting, and you know, obviously the president wants significant more budget being spent. You often will hear guys at the Pentagon bristle from that, because there are programs that they, you know, that certainly some programs are more favored by certain generals than others along the way here, right? We all know that story. But in terms of the next war we have to fight, the places we actually have to be, what does the Army see as a really necessary set of needs here?
This is all about lethality and being able to, you got to be able to match ranges. You've got to be able to see your adversaries. You got to worry, you got to control airspace. You got to figure out how you work networks in degraded environments. It's kind of scary when you got to talk on a radio, and if you squeeze the handset and you can't talk because you're denied.
Yeah.
That's a different way of how you have to operate, and it's different resiliency in our platforms, in our weapons, and how you make sure you can actually conduct operations in those kind of environments.
Technology obviously is changing.
Huge.
A ton here.
Huge.
And also space capabilities and things like that. And that's a little bit of what you're talking about here, to
it
make
is.
Sure that
it
there's
is.
Redundancy. So your troops on the ground at any given moment, if they have to, there's a bunch of different ways that they can communicate with each other.
You'll hear the buzzword multi-domain operations, but how do you make sure between space and cyber and all domains, it's the extension of air land battle, but it's more than just a tank on tank or an artillery piece. It's
right.
How do you operate in.
So new recruits are going through a different training. How dramatically different would you say it is than, say, 10 years ago, someone entering the Army?
They bring a different skill set than I did. So, you know, based on the gaming they do, I just talked to a bunch of cadets this afternoon. I just came from recruiting station. So today's the amount of volume, the speed of information, how many things are just like the screens in front of you, all that stuff is pumping you what an air picture is, what a ground picture is, where all your disposition of forces are. And today's youth coming in are much more adapt, agile, because of how all the stuff they got to play with. But they are very comfortable keeping pace with that much information being pumped to them, which is much different than a guy like me, which just had a map, a compass,
and a gun.
I could have been Attila the Hun, but you're just plotting stuff across a map, and you can see as far as a pair of binoculars will let you see. Where today, all these vehicles, all these aircraft have all these optics. And you can see forever, and you have much better situational awareness.
Where were you first stationed?
Fort Polk, Louisiana.
Ah, and then when an overseas assignment, where did you go?
I went to there from Panama, and then I came back to the States and went to a Ranger battalion in Fort Lewis, and ended up jumping back into Panama for just cause to chase Noriega for a while.
Oh,
and then that was a lot of fun.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. That is, by the way, one of the great made for cable movies of
all times,
the Noriega movie. Let's talk about, because a lot of the conversation that's going on in between the military journalism and then the military sort of think tank community is the difference between kinetic and cyber war. Kinetic war is, you know, what we know, which is, you know, bullets and bombs and things like that. There is a growing theory here that if there were to be another global conflict, that the global conflict would really be about blinding. It would really be about creating a cyber attack on the United States, which would shut down electrical grids and ATMs and all of our logistics systems.
Commerce.
Yes. And the country gets to get invaded in total chaos without destroying the buildings.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So where are we on that in terms of our self-defense, and where's the Army's role in that?
We're the leading proponent for the Department of Defense on all things cyber. It's called creating a persistent cyber training environment. But how are we teaching commanders to understand how to operate both from a defensive and, again, from an Army perspective? It's how do you harden, resilient, both everything from installations to platforms. But I think the bigger issue here is you just said it very well. How are you teaching commanders today? When I was a guy invading Iraq, when I went back as a brigade commander, You had to blow stuff up to shut it down. The key is, and it is an authorities issue, but how are commanders now enabled to shut down a power grid without blowing anything up? Water grid? How do you pick locks on cyber encrypted doors? How do you control cameras like in a city like Chicago? How do you get to remotely control your street cameras so you know what's going on without having to, when you physically can't see it? And that's a whole different way of fighting that we have to keep trying to present those opportunities to our leaders.
Do you feel as though the focus is proper on that?
I do.
And that the money is going
well,
to the right
places. The challenge here is how do you play catch up? You talk about these gaps, and how do you modernize everything we're talking about, from hardening platforms to making them cyber resilient? The dollars required to move different capabilities, technologies, and playing catch up is a challenge.
General, let's talk a little bit about Afghanistan, because I know that you have a great experience there, and longest war in American history. What is your perspective on what these two decades have been?
Kind of unnerving. I mean, it's a difficult problem set. And again, it ends up, as you're watching the reconciliation efforts at the end of the day, if an agreement cannot be made with the Taliban, and based on what they control there now, if you can't bridge that gap, and again, that has to involve, that's got to be, Afghanistan has to be part of that solution. But at the end of the day, you know, it's once again, what do the people of Afghanistan want? What's that government look like? They are a constitution-based government. But again, the challenges with that governance over there has been the long pole in the tent since day one.
Well, and is it the issue of communication, too? Because you have disparate groups of people throughout the country that are not necessarily in contact with each other.
That's correct.
To form consensus, there isn't a national media. There isn't a national. These are literally tribal chieftains.
That's correct. You know, from an ethnic, tribal, even sectarian piece, you get all those factor in. But what you just said is based on which part of the country you're talking about, their knowledge, awareness of what current day operations and current day conditions are in Kabul, if you're up north or down south, you know,
right.
It could, like the Grand Canyon. There's a big gap there, and they just don't understand it.
The great empires, the British, the Russians, everybody has tried
Correct.
At some point to tame that land, but part of it is about the terrain too, isn't it? It's just an impossible place to create an infrastructure.
It's a beautiful country, but it's a hugely complicated country. But you know, it is, the mountains are huge. You know, the deserts are far and wide, and it's a complicated terrain, both environmentally, geographically, and socioeconomically.
Right, and Iraq. Now, obviously, between Syria, Iraq, Iran. All the things that are happening in the region, and now you're seeing a bit of a flare in the conflict between the Gaza and what's happening in Israel. Are there solutions there?
I believe there are, but it requires a consolidated international approach versus a fragmented international approach. You know, the more players that get in the pot, as you watch what Russia does, what Iran does, what Turkey does, the more complicated and fractured the approach is going to be. That's going to continue to allow that environment to fester.
How important is NATO to this whole process?
NATO, as you know, is mostly a European focused, and based on what's happening in Eastern Europe, that's probably a good thing. You know, and as you look at the enhanced forward presence and everything that's happened from the Baltics on down to Poland, which is we are with the Canadians, the British, the Germans, that's a pretty strong statement about a defensive line in the East. And I think given what's happening in that part of the world, NATO's role there, that's probably where their focus should be.
Are there misconceptions? I guess, what are the challenges when it comes to recruitment? Are there misconceptions about what the job entails today? Do you find that that's true?
I do. I think the Army in the Department of Defense, probably writ large, are very misunderstood by folks because they hear all the deployment stories. They still see casualties. They know they're going to be gone away from home. And when you're competing with, what's it, about a 3.6 today unemployment rate,
and
where people pay a lot more, lot better pay on the outside than we pay in the military, that exacerbates the problem.
There are special skills. I mean, obviously, there's a lot that the Army offers.
We do. The Army, from a career perspective, I think, again, from a technical, developmental, educational perspective, nobody beats it. But I think, again, as service and giving to a cause bigger than you, but I think how you actually watch it change lives and coming in the Army, will make you a stronger, more resilient, more capable person. And I think employers realize that, and that's one of our competitions when they draw from us, because they will, a soldier will come to work, a soldier will be healthy, they will work a full day, they'll stay committed, they'll mm-hmm. give it their all, they're smart, right. You know, and so, so
problem solving. You're teaching the modern military teaches these young men and women to assess the problem and solve it.
Correct.
Right. And that's it's right. a very, you know, I remember when the Army did an Army of One, which was to me, as a marketing guy, I think I understood what they were trying to do. The idea, the mission was totally right, but it sent the wrong signal. Like, everybody's going to do their own thing. The idea, though, is that each soldier is capable of solving the problem for him or herself and those around, you know, all the people around.
As part of a team.
Yes, them. And that's, and to me, I just, you know, we always are very, we're very diligent about looking when we're looking for people who have military experience, because you do, for all the reasons you just said. They come to you so in a level of preparedness that you do not find with the average candidate, you know, because they've got this sense. No one's going to give up. You are, the idea of giving up is trained out of you.
That's right. No, you're a very resilient person, but you're dedicated to, you know, this is mission accomplishment. And none of us, and again, the average Army person is a very competitive type A, you know, athlete, yeah. you know, and they're determined to win. And mm-hmm. it's about winning, not losing. And that's a cultural norm for us.
I want to go back to this because the whole gamer thing
yes.
is a big deal. I know the Air Force specifically, and now maybe even the Space Force, as they, mm-hmm. they sort of spool that up. That is going to be, they're looking for people who've got, as you mentioned, screen capability, fast hand reflexes, right. things like that, right. you know, drone drivers and the rest. But you guys are looking for that. What do you think the best advantage that kids who are particularly good at video games bring to the Army?
They bring a weird sense of agility that I can't comprehend. You know, I was an athlete, but I don't, every time my kids ever tried to put one of those devices in front of me and I tried to coral a different kind of hand, I coordination, if you will, mm-hmm. different than it would be with a tennis ball or a golf club. Mm-hmm. You're hitting all these toggles and buttons, but your head is, you're totally mesmerized on the screen in front of you. And their ability to eye hand mm-hmm. on devices, and you mentioned everything you just discussed when you're talking about drones and other things. The issue is how are you actually using that seeker?
Yeah.
And being able to find what you're looking for, and you're not fixated like I would be on this box right here. So that's what I think.
Don't tell your troops that, General. Don't ever tell them that.
I won't tell them.
No, don't show any weakness, General. That's a bad idea.
I'm too old to be weak. So anyway,
I'm guessing he's not weak at all.
But that's a skill I just don't have, and so I'm sorry.
It is interesting, though, because, you know, it's funny because, you know, parents get, you know, pretty agitated about right. their kids growing up with screens yeah. and they're constantly
yes.
doing it.
I did.
And they're, right, and there's, as a parent, right? Yeah. And they're
taught to tell your kids, put down their screens, right?
Right.
Don't pay attention. Be with me. Be in the moment. Talk to me. Look at me.
It's a skill, though, that I know that there's a lot of, you know, a lot of guys in the Pentagon, in those Skunk Works parts of the Pentagon where guys are thinking, you know, great thoughts mm-hmm. are, you know, they're focused on that because yes. they realize that, as we're talking about, the next wars will be Connecticut, but will be at standoff,
yep.
right?
Yep.
They're going to be,
yep.
the warfighter may actually be, as they are now, thousands of miles away from the battle,
right.
but still kinetically impacting
that's
the
right.
battle.
That's right.
And then you're going to have the people who are, and then the cyber threat that really is,
that's huge.
That's where the next thing is, yeah, and coding and all
of
that.
All things artificial intelligence, robotics, autonomous systems. You know, and as I travel around and ask a lot of technocrats, I mean, do you foresee the day that a machine will actually make the decision of a human, and in our case, like clearing fires
yeah,
to target
yeah,
something?
Yeah.
And what's the answer?
Yeah,
to that?
Well, I'm very scared about pulling the human link out of that, but I think the way things are going is probably inevitable. But ultimately, it's a judgment call, and
mm-hmm.
I'd have to have better confidence that a machine
mm-hmm.
could actually make that judgment. But it may have more knowledge than I would.
We're not
it,
right. there yet.
No. Knowledge and then the morality of the warfighter.
That's rules of engagement. You're right.
Yes.
Geneva Hague Convention. Then the question becomes, are you going to take out 10 innocent kids
right.
when I try to shoot you? So,
which is what we run into now when, you know, we client state out some of the weaponry and we see how that gets used. And then we're like, well, that's not how we would use it. And next thing you know, you've got Congress all up in arms
right.
and, you know,
right.
you've got a person. All right. I always have to ask this question. Favorite post?
Hawaii.
Oh, of course.
No follow-up question needed on that.
Yeah, I was just going to guess
what
that.
I was going to say, how, Fort Polk, were you?
How,
no.
you like, because they got mosquitoes the size
snakes,
of yeah
crocodiles you know.
Yeah, I guess it's a swamp.
But
yeah.
Good crawdads. Yeah,
yeah, and where in Hawaii were you?
Schofield Barracks.
Oh yes, beautiful. Right up in the middle of Oahu.
On Oahu. That's yes. Right. Up right before North Shore. Right yes. Before you, where all the surfing is.
About 10 yes. Minutes away from Banzai, which yes. Is yes. The yes. And that and one of the great little strips of restaurants on the planet. So
it
yes,
is.
There
it
you
is.
Go. You're right about that. Least favorite post.
Fort Polk, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you were going to hope for a decommissioned. Post before I ask that question, hopefully. You could always go with decommissioned. They closed it. I don't know.
When you said they had good crawdads and that was the big upside, I thought, well, that's something. You got that.
There's a lot of stories I could tell you, but I can't tell you on here. But,
no, we appreciate that, General.
Being a New Yorker, that was a wild place to get sent.
Where did you grow up?
In Westchester County in New York.
And what drew you to the Army?
My heritage. My father was my great grandfather World War One. My father World War Two. My brother Vietnam, and everybody did it. So I just I was.
Do you think you were going to make a career out of it?
No. I had very short horizons, and never thought I would be where I am.
Do you ever think you'd have 3 stars in your lapel?
No. Nope.
Gee.
Wow. I think if you think that way, you don't do a good job.
Let me ask you a question. Your family ever? Did your brothers ever think you were going to have 3 stars?
I doubt it.
Are they worried about it?
I doubt it. I think they're worried about the years of being gone and what's happened. Yeah. It's been. I'm coming up on 38 years. It's been a. Wow. It's been a. You know, lots of deployments, lots of time away. It's been. There were some really stressful times in the Anderson household with kids, two boys, but my youngest is a lieutenant at Fort Benning now. He followed suit.
Wow.
A little bit later, he got in the academy, backed out, and then he ended up coming back and going the OCS route, and now he's down there. Wow. Waiting to go to Ranger School. So
thank
it's
you to you and your sir. Family.
Thank
your
you.
Service.
Thank
38
you.
Yes. Years, Lieutenant General
thank
Joseph
you,
Anderson, United States Army. Thank you, sir. All right, right now, Kim Gordon, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
Roe Attorney General Kwame Raoul believes two judges have made mistakes in the sentencing of a former Chicago cop.